IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
Yes, indeed. It's the award-winning, national award-winning 9 till noon show. Great to have you on board this morning. Thank you so much for all of your calls and comments and just being there, actually, because without you guys, we wouldn't be here. So thank you very much for choosing your number one station, Highland Radio. And that's what we are, a radio station. But also want to welcome the thousands of people that watch the 9 till noon show every day as well, or across the week. I want to say good morning to Annie, Marie, John, Charlie, Pedro, watching us apparently from America, Cora, Patricia, Angela, and on and on and on. Thank you so very much indeed. Over a million live minutes are watched of this program across social media every single month. A million live minutes. Isn't that remarkable? So we really appreciate all your support, and more of you now watching on your big screen as well, which is great. Why watch them rowing over English matters or whatever else be's on in the mornings when you can sit and hear and watch your local stuff. Would anyone know the condition of the roads from Letterkenny to Belfast, please? I don't know. Has anyone been on that road? But like, my rule of thumb is that generally the main roads are well treated, so hopefully that is the case. If anyone can offer any advice in that regard, let us know. Why did it take 5 weeks for the traffic lights to be fixed on Main Street, Ballybuffet? A very good question. I don't know what would have taken so long. Another listener says, we're lucky in the Twin Towns that no one got killed. Pure luck, I would say. Regarding the road markings in Ballybuffet, there's a code of conduct, chapter 8 for markings on the road. They've now not adhered to the code of conduct. The crossings are very dangerous. They've to be earmarked by signage or lights for safety. Somebody in the council had to oversee these markings. I would like to know who gave the go-ahead for these crossings without referring to chapter 8. I'm not familiar with chapter 8. These were a pilot. Now, I'm not sure if you can sort of vary from codes of conduct for pilot projects, but these were not done like this before. There was three locations. We were guinea pigs up here. As I say, thankfully, no one was seriously injured, but common sense is beginning to prevail. And a year and a half later, we could have told them. We did tell them, didn't we, from the beginning, what's going on? Do Ukrainians have the right to vote in the upcoming local elections? I think anyone in the country has the right to vote in the local elections. I'll get the actual legislation for you, but my understanding that anyone here has a right. I'll get the exact rules in relation to that before the end of the program. Greg, it's -4 in Cloughan, very cold and dangerous for travel. Okay, be careful in and around the Cloughan area. And we've a few people listening, watching across. Aunt Audrey says it's snowy in Claddy, and we've reports that Scotland and some parts of England, London, a listener in London says it's very cold there as well. Hopefully Donegal County Council do the same as Mayo. We've taken more refugees than any other county. I think we have done enough now, says Ava. We have a high proportion of Ukrainian refugees and a high proportion of IPAS applicants as well. And it has to be said, in Donegal, have been broadly accepted. I think, you know, you can highlight certain individual situations and try and, but if you think about it broadly, and we would talk about, you know, what is it, close to 7,000 or 8,000 people have, you know, broadly been welcomed here and are getting on well. I think there does come a point in some people's minds where there is an upper limit as to what communities and their resources can support. Perhaps many feel that we're at that now. But as I say, I'm not really quite sure, and no one has been able to tell me, but according to the papers today, Donegal County Council is going to hear a motion similar to that was proposed in Mayo, that the council disengage with Roderick O'Gorman's office until some sort of a plan is put in place. As I say, I don't know which councillor might be proposing that. I presume the paper has information. I don't know who it is. I don't know who proposed the one in Mayo, actually. That might give us some indications. I'll check it all out. By the way, just in relation to, and I make no apologies for mentioning it again, the imminent closure of the pastoral child and adolescent counselling service. We heard from the bishop yesterday. We heard from Donna Harper yesterday, who very sadly lost her beautiful Leona in the Chrysler tragedy, and many, many others who've availed of those services and continue to do so. They're going to be left high and dry effectively because the service is to close because TUSLA or the HSC will not fund a full-time director that is required for governance reasons and development to run that service. It's going to close And there's no other child and adolescent mental health services here. We contacted the offices of Minister Charlie McConnellogue and the Minister for Children, Roderick O'Gorman, yesterday morning. It's now 24 hours on, and we've yet to have, unless something's came in the last couple of minutes, we've yet to have any contact back from either of those offices. So, unfortunately, we can only do what we can do, but we're keeping the pressure on as much as we can. Housing Bill 2020, 39th Amendment to the Constitution, Schedule Part 2, Section 3.2, the right to delimit private property for the common good. In other words, take your house off you if you have more bedrooms than you need. The referendum will also be this year. Is that not a proposal from People Before Profit, though? I don't think that's actually going to be voted on. I'm going to have to double check that. But my understanding was that was a proposal from People Before Profit that didn't really get much traction. And then it was said that it was a government initiative. Again, I'll check into it, but I don't believe that's the government's policy. The crossings in Ballybofey, Stranorla have never been safe. They're too risky. They need to be signed and lit up, too. Or have flashing lights. Stupidity and lack of planning is dangerous. A dangerous, dangerous combination. Get rid of the crossing at the bank corner. I think most people would agree. The one at Andy's shop is so hard to see at night. It needs to be properly lit up for sure. I agree with you there as a motorist. The island of Liscooley is rotten with dirt and you can't see it. There's also one in St. Johnston, which actually has been hit twice, I think. Oh, right, the island, a traffic island. Okay. That's not good. That's not good at all. A couple of cancellations. Carrigart Bingo cancelled tonight. So a few disappointed heads around Carrigart Downings. It's not going ahead tonight. So unfortunately for you, the Creaselot Day Centre is closed today as well too. Not surprising. We only get a couple of days like this a year. We might get another one like that tomorrow. I'm not preempting anything, but we might. But as I say, then we're looking at windy, wet weather for the weekend. In relation to... hi, Greg. It is clear to see the government have no clear plan rehousing of asylum seekers. Why didn't they refurbish the other hotel in Roscrea for asylum seekers and leave the functioning hotel for the local people? But they would say that because the person who owns that hotel wanted it to be used for asylum seekers. But the government was a active party in negotiating that, all right? So the government did take that hotel out of commission by engaging with its owner. And now they're talking about getting into the hotel business, which is remarkable. But they go on to say that, on the other hand, the owner of the hotel must have got a great offer from the Minister for Integration to dismiss his staff and cancel all weddings, etc. It's also secretive. No wonder the locals feel hard done by. Communication. We've been talking about communication for well over 2 years now. And I was listening. You just listen to some of the commentary and some of the remarks and what ministers are saying about we need to improve communication. And we've been talking about this, as I say, for so long. And nothing is advancing. Nothing is advancing in that regard. And some information that gets put out into the public domain then is proven wrong. Why are national schools closed but secondary schools are not? I've had to take the day off work to look after my children in national school and still drop my secondary school children to school or they'd be marked as absent. If the roads are unsafe for primary school students to travel to school, how is it safe for students to travel to secondary school? Now, I'm sure there's a very good reason for that, isn't there? I don't know what the reason might be. Is it to do with the bus runs? Or I don't know. Someone out there knows. There's no point me bluffing it. Why would a secondary school be open and a national school closed? Because, of course, it's discommoded this parent who's had to take the day off work to look after primary school children, but has still had to drop their secondary children to school. Very frustrating. Very frustrating, you can imagine. That's a day out of annual leave. Or indeed, you know, may not look good with the bosses. Some bosses might frown and go, oh, that person can't be relied on. A bit of snow when they call in sick. I don't know. Right, stay right where you are. We have loads coming up in the show to keep you informed and entertained. You won't want to miss it. Okay, we're joined in studio now by Kian Blake, sixth year student and chair of the student council. Good morning, Kian.
How are you, Greg?
Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. I'm doing good, thank you. Shay Deasley is a transition year student and deputy chair of the student council at St. Union's College in Letterkenny. Good morning to you, Shay.
Thanks for having us.
No, it's good to have you in. Thanks for calling in. Now, we're speaking in the context of a letter that was sent to the Education Minister, Minister Foley. Shall I start with you, Kian? Mm. It's a detailed letter. It's well put together, of course. What point is it trying to make to the Minister?
Well, I suppose we're kind of looking at the background of it all first. You know, we've been looking at an extension to students for a long time now, you know, kind of the early 2000s, really, the times of past presidents, Father Carney, and principals, Mr. Chris Darby. So that had been in the plans for a long time. And we had different kind of planning permission applications put in, and it was rejected. So by the time kind of 2019 came around, we were part of what was called the ADAPT 2 program, which had a number of different schools involved. And we kind of led it, and it was all about getting extensions and upgrades for secondary schools. So that's kind of mainly where the biggest kind of jump in it was. You know, it was very kind of stagnated for a long time. And then 2019, it really started. We'd been submitting all our stuff since then, and it's kind of stalled since. Not so much on our part, as I said, we had everything put in, but it's almost become a running joke in the college. You know, you'd be told in first year, we'll have this new building by the time you're in sixth year. And so the Parents Association and the Board of Management had already written to the Department of Education. And so it was the students' job next to write. So we thought, you know, let's do this right now. Mm. Let's get this building.
All right,
so
we'll get into the thrust of that. Shay, I mean, the project formally confirmed, you know, you were an apple in your father's eye, as they say. I mean, this predates both of you.
Yeah, I would have been in primary school whenever this would have been approved. Like, and this would have been
2021. Sorry, I thought that was 2001. I beg your pardon. Go ahead. You were well into the world at this point. But you were in national school, Shay. Take it up there.
I would have been in national school whenever, and we would have been shown this, like, as one of the big selling points of going to St. Union's. Like, we were meant to be getting this new school built and so on and so forth. But it's really stalled, like, and we're trying to do our best to get it going the best we can.
And it's interesting that the minister hears the student's perspective, Shay. What are the points that you're really trying to get across to her in this letter?
We're trying to get across the point that we've got 1,000 students and we've only got 2 bathrooms too inside this school.
Wow.
2 sets of bathrooms, and it's not great.
Mm. And what else? It's more than that.
We've only got 2 DCD rooms and 2 woodwork rooms in the school. And also we have 1 art room. And the heating's not regulated in the prefabs anymore.
Yeah, and Cian, the point is too that it is a great learning institution, St. Union's College, and the students are trying their best, the principals and the teachers, but it's bound to be, you know, holding things back as to where, you know, the full potential it could realise.
Exactly, yeah. Like, you know, everything in St. Union's is done to the highest degree, and we do, you know, we have excellent results constantly coming out of the school in terms of academic and extracurricular. But we feel we've nearly kind of hit a brick wall at the minute. You know, we feel we have so much more potential, but we just don't have the facilities to accommodate that. So, you know, the likes of, as Shay said, you know, with 2 DCG and TG rooms, you know, you'd find a lot of the times classes that have to move to just a regular classroom, they wouldn't be able to work in the practical rooms because there just aren't enough. So that's the kind of main issue.
Yeah, science rooms as well. There's only,
exactly, yeah.
There's only 2. And also in terms of when money was last spent on this facility, like, it's over half a century. Even I wasn't born then.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? That's how long ago it was. So it's well overdue, the approval of funding at this point, I think.
The so-called new building that we have now, you know, that was put in 1979, so we feel we're well overdue at this stage. And of course, the school has a great legacy as well. You know, last year we were awarded Wellbeing School of the Year for our efforts we put in towards student and staff wellbeing and sustainable development. So the work is put in, and in fairness to the students and the staff of the college, they go to every extent to ensure our initiatives succeed.
Yeah, and Shay, you're also pointing out to the Minister for Education that the school's congested. You know, there's more students than there is adequate space. Some of the rooms are cold. Some of the rooms have black mould in them. I mean, this is not a proper learning environment.
No, not at all, Greg. And even you look at our recreational hall for PE, like, and there might be 6 heaters in it, but there's only 2 of them working. And even at that, the block work and all, it's not energy efficient, so it's not even keeping heat in, and the cold's just getting in. Like,
yeah, and it's a complicated one, isn't it? Because whilst you have to sort of outline the deficits, at the same time, you want to make sure that it's clear that everyone is working as hard as they can, that it's hitting targets, that it's winning awards. You know what I mean? It's a tough one because you want to push the argument for investment, but at the same time, you don't want to sort of give the impression that the school's not operating at an excellent level as it is.
Yeah, we have immense pride in our school, like, And really, everybody in St Union's loves to be there, but we just feel that with this new school building, we can excel further.
Yeah, you want Cian, the minister, to see this firsthand.
Yeah, exactly. Once we were asked to send a letter, I thought, do this properly. Let's get the minister up, see the fantastic work that is performed on a daily basis by the students and staff, and, you know, let her see for herself why we deserve this so much.
Yeah, okay. So progress is frustratingly slow. Plan of permission has been granted by Donegal County Council. Are there any positive inclinations in terms of spending? Because, you see, this all ties into then to government strategy on where it invests money.
Exactly. You know? Well, like a growing skill that's becoming more important is obviously leadership and communication skills. So as head boy and as chairperson of the student council, you know, it's my I'm very cautious to distribute leadership between student council members and my team of senior prefects. But even that's difficult because, you know, we've one meeting room, the boardroom, so it's very difficult to, you know, sit down and to strategize different things that are coming up. And just these additional skills, not just the academic ones, but these additional skills are also being affected as well, that we just can't get as far as we want with them. And even working in the canteen, you know, we have our prefects working in there. We would try to distribute leadership to them so that they're, you know, self-sufficient, or they use their initiative, you know, call the next person up, serve them. But there's just not enough space. You know, you're cramped on top of each other. And that's, you know, that's a big concern I have just with leadership.
Yeah. Now, the letter was sent on the 15th of January. So hopefully it's now with the minister. And you'd be very interested in her response. I think her response might be really quite telling because, as I say, it's been structured in such a way that it needs a response. So it'll be interesting to what she has to say, Cian.
Yeah, we got a response from Minister Foley's private secretary to say that she'd like to acknowledge that she's received it and they're looking into it. So we'll hopefully get a response soon. As well as inviting Minister Foley, we've also invited our five local TDs and some of our local councillors to visit the school as well. So we would hope that as many of them would come as well and to pass our concerns on to the minister to get this issue addressed as soon as possible.
Yeah, and one of the key lines from the letter, Shay, is simple. The current facilities restrict the potential of our students on a daily basis.
100%, Greg. Like, look at the prefabs, the rec. Like, you're going into a classroom in the summer and it's roasting and you're taking off your jumper and you're wearing your shirt.
But you can't be heated anyway. It's roasting in here and you're sitting in a jacket.
Yeah, Greg, but and then in the winter it's freezing.
It's not taking me on, Cian. No, you're right. I know what you're saying. The temperature can't be regulated in the summer or the winter. Too hot in the summer, too cold in the winter. How's transition year going for you, Shane?
Yeah, it's great. We have a lot of options at St Union's. Like, I'm doing the PE course.
Brilliant.
And we went down to the ATU in the first half of the year doing gym work with Neil Barrett. And that's a really great course.
Yeah. Is that what you sort of have one eye on in the future, maybe?
Yeah, maybe going down the PE route or something would be great, yeah.
Brilliant stuff. Do you play sports?
Yeah, I play for Drumkey now.
Oh, well done. What about you, Cian? You're in sixth year. It's a busy year for you,
yeah.
Especially taking on this type of work as well. You're leaving Cert coming up in a couple
of
months?
Leaving Cert coming up in June, Max next week. But we're going okay.
Do you have any idea what career path you might choose?
Well, hopefully going to teaching, come back to the college eventually.
These young men from St Union, says the listener, are a credit to their family and school. They are so articulate. Indeed, I agree 100%. Listen, thanks so much for getting the points across so clearly. And we want an update too when you get a formal response from the minister.
We will, of course, yeah.
When are you hoping to, sort of invite the public reps in on a given day, Shay, or invite them to come as they're available? What's the story?
We're happy to meet them whenever they're available. They can come to St Union's anytime.
All right, brilliant stuff. Listen, best of luck with your campaign here. As I say, it's a very articulate letter and it makes very strong arguments that have to be responded to. That's why it's well formulated.
Yeah.
It can't be just brushed off. You know, you explain clearly why you as students want to see this progressed because the college is doing fantastic stuff. And look where it could actually go with even better facilities.
Absolutely.
Cian Blake, sixth year student and chair of the Students' Council. Best of luck with the mocks.
Thank you.
And the Leaving Cert. Shay Deasley, TY student and deputy chair of the Student Council at St Union's College, Letterkenny. Thank you as well. All right, well done, lads. You did brilliant. And we'll be back with more on the programme after the break. Right, local enterprise offices supported 6,640 new jobs nationwide last year. 82% of the roles were created outside of Dublin, 321 of those more specifically for us here in Donegal. The Employment Minister, Neil Richmond, joins us on the programme now. Thank you very much for joining us, Minister.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
No, it's good to have you on. This is a significant, isn't it? Especially, I suppose, when we are sort of statistically at full employment here, still be able to create roles and fill them. It's quite the achievement.
Yeah, no, and it's really down to the excellent work of the local enterprise offices that are based in every single county in the country, working hand in hand with the local authorities. And what we've seen is a lot of these new businesses, and indeed the new jobs being created in these businesses, they're reactive to what people want to do. So it's a bit anecdotal, but I spoke to a couple of companies and the individuals weren't working for various family reasons, care reasons. So they weren't claiming job seekers or anything, but they weren't part of our labour force. But during COVID, they were given the opportunity, a bit more time in their hands to think about what they wanted to do, to go back to workplace. Perhaps they started a small business in the shed or in the spare bedroom, or indeed taking over the family kitchen. And they've realized by engaging with the local enterprise office that they can take what many would say was a very talented hobby and actually make a living out of it. And that's been reflected over the last 10 years since the local enterprise offices were created. We've seen jobs created across the country. And this year, that 6,640 number, that's a record. That's the most amount of jobs created by Leo-backed companies in the last 10 years. It's really, really encouraging. And as you say, 82% of them outside Dublin, Donegal has done really well, particularly well. And it's something that's so heartening. And it just shows that this investment, and more importantly, the work of the local enterprise office teams, it's paying very clear dividends both for our economy and our communities.
It's the type of jobs they create as well. I mean, obviously, we talk about foreign direct investment and how important it is. And yes, you know, a lot of these companies are huge employers. But a lot of the entrepreneurs, the businesses that the Leo offices support, you know, they're maybe at small to medium in scale, indigenous, employing locally, different types of employment, and arguably perhaps more sustainable too into the long run.
These are small and what we call micro enterprises. Maybe it's one person, maybe it's two or three. And certainly what we've done deliberately in the last year is we've changed the remit of local enterprise office. So previously they would only work with businesses with up to 10 employees, but now we've given them the scope and, more importantly, the funding to work with businesses of up to 50 employees. We look at the
sector. 50 or 15? 50 or 15 there, sorry?
50, 50, Greg,
okay,
sorry.
No problem. No, it's not. It's just with the line. I just wanted to be sure. Go ahead, Minister.
And that number is very deliberate. So it's not just an incremental jump from 10, but that means that if the company has hit over 50 employees, they can then work with Enterprise Ireland, who work with our medium to large enterprises for encouraging exports and accessing foreign markets. So there's a very real deliberate strategy. But I think what's really interesting is the sectors where we're seeing these new jobs created by local enterprise office supported businesses. The vast majority of them are in lots of different areas, but two sectors really stand out to me. Firstly, it's in food production, which is something that has really good response, particularly in Donegal. And it's something that goes to the fact that we export so many foods, and indeed our economy is growing and people need lots more food. But the other area is engineering. And there's two aspects to this that I think are really fascinating. One is they are feeding into those large multinationals that you mentioned. They're providing the support, they're providing the materials into a much bigger edifice. But secondly, they're feeding quite clear into what is the big challenges that the state is facing. We need to build more homes, we need to build more infrastructure, and we need the new technologies, skills, to make sure that we can actually do that. And this is being driven by local Indigenous businesses.
I mean, these interviews are useful in recognising the Leo Enterprise offices, giving them a pat on the back. But two, I think, you know, we have a business podcast here, and often Enterprise Ireland or Leo is credited for the support that they give. And it's about spreading awareness that these services are there and some very dedicated people there on hand to assist. So it's good to recognise what's been done for now, but also to let people know that these services are there if they wish to engage with them. Hey, before I let you go, Minister, you're the Minister of Business. The government getting into the business of running hotels now. Are you across that situation in Ross Cray, where the government seems minded to fund a community hotel? As I say, if you're not across it, I respect that fully, but it's a interesting departure, to say the least.
Yeah, it's definitely an unfolding situation, Greg, and it's a long way from my brief, but we have a clear responsibility in the government to provide accommodation to those fleeing war and persecution. We'll continue to do that, but we have promised to increase the amount of communication with local communities and be very aware of local services, and hotel and accommodation services are really important to a lot of provincial towns. the hotel in question in Roscrea. I remember going to a 21st there 20 years ago because it was the only place that people could hold a venue of that. So we have to be balanced and aware that 100% we're going to provide accommodation. We're not going to provide a veto for local communities and housing refugees. But we have to do that to ensure that we maintain the level of social services locally. And that includes accommodation as well as education, healthcare and everything else.
Minister, thank you for your time. I do appreciate it. That's Employment Minister Neil Richmond there. 086 60 25,000 WhatsApps and texts. Postering is so judgmental. At best, the best looking and more presentable candidates are more proportionately likely to be elected. This is, we were having a conversation and debate in the first hour about whether or not, hey, listen, it's not going to be happening. It's not going to happen in terms of posters aren't going to be cancelled, aren't going to be across the board banned. A lot of people, some people might want to see that. And I don't think candidates are going to come together and agree not to poster. But if they do poster, are better looking candidates, more presentable candidates, more likely to get elected? I don't know. I think everyone looks their best on those posters. Some unrecognisable, but anyway. Hello, Greg. Please advise people to avoid the long lane, Letterkenny, if possible, as someone has abandoned a car near the top and the couple of vehicles that came down had to go the wrong side of the road and started going sideways. Lucky nothing was trying to get up, but it's extremely dangerous. Okay. Greg, please let the people know that there is a strike tomorrow in the north. Roads will not be gritted there, so they're advised to not travel. Now, I can't suggest at this point that people don't travel, but it is true. It's one of the biggest strikes ever in Northern Ireland, and road gritting, road maintenance at this stage is included in that. So we'll keep you updated in that, of course, because lots of people listening to us in the north. What's the policy regarding letterboxes when they say no junk mail? Does that give politicians the right to put stuff through your letterbox? That's an interesting situation. I'm not really quite sure how that works. I mean, if someone is stubborn enough, they're gonna stick it in, aren't they? I don't think it would work well for them. I would say most might respect it. I don't know. A lot of it comes via the post office, doesn't it? So I don't know what the story is with the local post staff. Maybe if there's a postman or woman listening to us, you know how a lot of this stuff comes through the post, i.e. you know, election reminders, maybe flyers. If someone says, you know, if someone says no junk mail, if you're a post person, let us know. Do you not put it through, or is that not classed as junk mail? Let us know, please. 086 60 25,000. Donegal has been devastated by mass immigration. Like Mayo, County Council should. Donegal, County Council, vote to ease cooperation with the Department on Asylum Seekers. But listen, it is non-binding. But has Donegal been devastated by mass immigration? Is that your view? I know it's the texter's view, but is that a broadly held view? Or is it what might happen into the future? But do you believe Donegal's devastated by mass immigration? I'm not sure that's what the general population think, but I don't know. That's why we are throwing the question out there. Was there any gritting in Donegal this morning? It's embarrassing the way Ireland closes down with a few centimetres of snow. All of the routes that are on the gritting programme are gritted. We have a massive amount of roads in this county, and clearly they all can't be gritted. But certainly any of the roads that are on the gritting programme that I travel on were perfectly clear. You can let me know what the situation was like where you are. I'd like to congratulate Mayo County Council for speaking out. Good for them, and I hope other counties do the same. As Greg says, the government have lost the people. Mayo County Council are actually thinking about their people, or are they thinking about elections? They know that they can vote the way they vote. They also know that it doesn't mean that refugees or immigrants won't come into the county. It means that the executive won't have the backing of the elected council as they go door to door looking for votes. So maybe it is a stand. Or maybe it's maybe some might see it as a cheap shot to get votes and really not standing with the council executive. I don't know. What do you think? That's the next of it. The delimit clause to be inserted in the constitution referendum to say the government has the right to take over the house if you've more bedrooms than you need. I'm going to check into that again. There's just no time because as we go to a break, we're setting something else up. But I was just really under the impression that that was an opposition proposal. Why are bus drivers last to know that schools are closed? Well, I suppose it depends on who's running the buses. Let your drivers know, lads and lassies. Could you say a big thank you to everyone who was out gritting the roads, helping everyone to travel indeed? And I did at the start of the programme. The Fanad Day Centre is not open today, folks, by the way, if you were looking to go to it. Donegal County Council is employing technology. The council's environment team has confirmed drones are now being used in the fight against illegal dumping in the county. In reports to members to a municipal district meeting this week, the team says waste and litter staff have been trained, licenses are in place, and drone work is now in progress. How this works, I don't know. The team says this has been done in association with the Connacht Ulster Waste Enforcement Regional Lead Authorities, with environmental staff now set to share what they've learnt with colleagues and other local authorities. So, I mean, drones have a limited flight time. Is it to locate dumping? Is it to try and spot those that dump? I think you'd have to be really lucky. But anyway, listen, if it eliminates it or helps eliminate it. Anne, Kieran and Claire, full of praise for the two lads that were in with us, Kieran and Che, from St. Union's, incredibly articulate and great spokespeople for the students of St. Union's. Tom Murray's owner of Murray's Pharmacy in Remelton and Castlefin, and treasurer too of the Irish Pharmacy Union, the IPU. Good morning to you, Tom. Great to see you again.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Okay, you had me heart in my mouth there for a moment. My cream of ale. Right. Okay. The IPU teaming up with RTE's Operation Transformation to support National Blood Pressure Day 2024. I mean, monitoring our blood pressure is critical, isn't it? And it's the type of thing often, if you have high blood pressure, or indeed mostly high blood pressure, that it can be symptomless. For some, there can be headaches and other things, but for the most part, it can be symptomless. But it's a really strong indicator in relation to heart health and health more generally, Tom.
Absolutely. So approximately 2/3 of the population over the age of 50 have high blood pressure. And as you say rightly, for the majority of those people, there's absolutely no symptoms. But high blood pressure is a risk factor for heart disease, for stroke, for dementia, for eyesight problems and kidney problems. So over 60% of us over the age of 50, like myself, unfortunately, have blood pressure, which is entirely symptomless. So getting to know your figure is the most important thing. A single measurement isn't diagnostic, but a single measurement is an indicator. So what we're doing in the IPU and across pharmacies, and there's more than half the pharmacies in Donegal taking part, there's almost 30 pharmacies taking part, which gives a great geographic spread in the county, is that we're partnering with Operation Transformation to allow people to come in on Thursday, tomorrow, just have a blood pressure check taken. We'll then give them a card saying either your blood pressure's fine, that it needs to be monitored, and we'll ask the people to come back to pharmacies and give them lifestyle advice on how to reduce it if it's any minorly raised, or there may be some patients who'll be referred to their doctor for further investigation. It's about giving people a bit of power. I mean, we would recommend that anybody over the age of 40 would have a blood pressure checked done annually, and anybody under the age of 40 approximately every 5 years. That's the recommended care, but when you talk to people in the community, very few people, including myself, get their blood pressure monitored as regularly as they should.
Yeah, and listen, I'm sure in your pharmacy and others, there are blood pressure monitors available that you can check it at home. I mean, it's good to go and get it checked in a certain environment. But if a lot of people are like me with the old white coat syndrome, you wouldn't believe the figures I can pump out, Tom. It's unbelievable. Like, doctors go, no, you can't. The bottom number can't go up like that because you're stressed. I says, doctor, yeah, it can. I'm terrible. But anyway, the point being is you know, there's an awful lot of things, Tom, unfortunately, that can limit our life in terms of our activity, can shorten our lives, diseases we can acquire, and all that. And you know, we would love treatment for them. We'd love successful treatment for them, and yet we still wait for science to catch up. This is one area. You don't want to be walking around with high blood pressure for a long time. There's just no doubt about that, or for any time. This is one area that, if dependent on where it's at, lifestyle changes and medicine is there and is available. Absolutely. To get your blood pressure down to a normal level. This is something not to be afraid of, necessarily.
Yeah. Absolutely, it's one of the most treatable conditions that we have. I mean, we have known about blood pressure. If you talk about the amount of studies and medicine medicine history that surrounds this topic, it's one of the best-known topics globally. We certainly, with lifestyle changes and with appropriate medicine, you can absolutely control your blood pressure. It is one of the most treatable conditions. And it is, as I say, it's a symptomless condition, so people don't worry about it. But it is a serious condition, as you point out there, for a whole range of risk factors. Simple things like a bit more fitness, walking, weight control, reduce alcohol intake, reducing smoking, maybe reducing caffeine intake. Simple lifestyle things like those can have significant impact on reducing your blood pressure.
Yeah, and continuous stress too. You know, if you can try and just... But then again, through exercise and better diet, a lot sometimes the stress can come down. What is the normal blood pressure? I can never remember. It's 120 over 80 generally, isn't it?
120 over 80 is textbook perfect. At 50 years of age, if I had mine below 140 over 80, I'd be happy.
Really? I'm banging out a 130 over 80, and I was... So me and you aren't too far off here.
130 over 80 is pretty acceptable, to be honest with you.
Thanks, Tom.
You're probably a little bit younger than me, so I'm going to give you less latitude.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like one of those things. Once you... because... The longer you walk around with high blood pressure, you know, it can, heart disease, as you mentioned, the risk there. And some damage can be done that can't be undone. Stroke, dementia, as you mentioned, problems with eyesight or kidneys. And I think it's once you actually go to the likes of your pharmacy, Tom, and other pharmacies for the first time, right? As you say, it's probably fine. Might need to be checked again, lifestyle changes, or your GP might want to put on a 24-hour monitor.
Yeah.
But it's really, really treatable. And I think once you actually start monitoring it, it's easier then. I think a lot of people are afraid as to what number might come up or what it might mean. But this is one of those areas of health that, you know, there's a lot of positivity there if you sort of get a handle on the numbers.
Absolutely. And it's something that nobody should be afraid of. The first time I was told I had blood pressure, I was actually quite angry because I thought I was quite fit and healthy. And I was really disappointed. And I kind of said, you've got to be joking. And I took it quite badly. But then I said, oh, pop yourself on, Tom. Look at the science and just do the right thing. But once you start controlling, absolutely, it's incredibly controllable. And people shouldn't have any fear of getting their blood pressure taken. It's a simple, non-invasive. It's not painful. It's a dead simple test. It's just putting a cuff on your arm. It takes a couple of minutes. And, you know, generally, because of that white coat syndrome, I would generally take three and average out the closest two. And I just relax people and give them something to read and say, look, just take a chill pill and let's improve the numbers.
The thing is you know, like I would suffer with anxiety. I have all of my life. At different times of my life, it's been really acute and limited my functionality. At other times it's been okay, and now it's grand, okay? And one of the way it manifested that, because you have circular thinking and you think on things, a lot of it can be, if you're very, very anxious, is about health, right? Yep. So you can constantly think about, and you get yourself up into a tiswas to the point where you won't go and get an eye test, you won't go and get your blood pressure checked.
Absolutely.
You check your pulse and it's racing at 120 or 130 and you think, how could this be? There must be something wrong with me. The reason I'm saying all of this, Tom, is... one thing that has helped me greatly is actually just going to get my blood pressure checked and getting the 24-hour monitor on, okay? Also, you know, having a watch that does monitor my pulse on a more regular basis so that I am content that normally it's pretty average, right? Not just when I'm checking it and I'm getting average. So the reason I'm saying that is because there might be people listening that are afraid to go to the GP for the kind of, they might be kind of the same as I am, Tom.
Yeah.
And maybe they might see the pharmacy as a more chilled sort of environment. And just to encourage people to go and get it checked, because we've heard stories of a woman was on this show, I think. She really healthy woman, out running and everything, just got a random check. And she had acute high blood pressure. I think it was like 240 over 120 or 130 or something.
Okay.
Like really dangerous. And it was just getting it checked that once and then got the right medication and got that sorted. So it's really important we make the effort, Tom.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why we have consultation rooms in pharmacies for the last number of years. So it's a walk-in service. Generally don't need an appointment. It's a relaxed environment and it's accessible for people. But the condition you speak to there about anxiety and almost living in denial of healthcare is something that men are worse at than women. Women tend to be a lot braver, a lot more open. They have more conversations. Men tend to say, oh, it's a weakness if I go and get this checked, or they live in this fear bubble. And it's just helping people get over that. So we just encourage as many people as possible. Tomorrow, at least, is this national day in participation with Operation Transformation. But, I mean, throughout the year, we regularly take blood pressure monitoring for people.
Exactly. It's just to say this service is here, tie it in with a big show, and hopefully people go and get it checked. Listen, I can't run through the pharmacies in Donegal that are participating because there's a ton of them. The Cara Pharmacies, Murray's Pharmacies, Pillbox Lloyd's, Carrigart Pharmacy, and on it goes. I don't want to exclude anyone, but my point being that pretty much right across the county, there's somewhere you can go in and get your blood pressure checked, and it'll be A, you're doing all right, B, come back again and we'll check it. Maybe you need to do a bit more walking or C, and it's nothing to be afraid of. Head to the GP, see if you need a 24-hour monitor, see if you need a tablet or something, and often you don't either as well.
Absolutely.
So nothing to be afraid of, but you can avoid the increased risks of heart disease, stroke, dementia, eyesight problems or kidney problems.
Yeah, and just contact your local pharmacy and I'm sure they'll give you advice if they're not participating. And they may just take your blood pressure anyway. Most of them generally do. And, you know, they can confirm if they're part of this initiative or not.
All right, Tom, you don't look over 50, if that's any comfort, even though I've got lower blood pressure than you.
I was going to say, if you suffer from anxiety, you should see what it's like sitting in your waiting room waiting for you to click on the Zoom button.
I'm a better host than I am a guest, so I know exactly what you're saying, Tom. I actually can do this because I've got control of the buttons. I don't like it when I don't have control of the buttons. But listen, you always do well. You wouldn't know it, Tom. Thank you so very much indeed. Right. God bless you.
Thanks,
all right, take care.
Okay, take care.
Always good to have you on the show. That's Tom Murray, owner of Murray's Pharmacy in Remelton and Castlefin and treasurer of the Irish Pharmacy Union. And it is a very serious issue as well. But listen, sometimes you have to have a different approach. And be a bit more relaxed about it, and then maybe it might be more encouraging for people to sort of go and get the blood pressure checked, and if they need to get a handle on something, to get a handle on it too. And you know what? If you're over 50 or over 40, no harm to get your cholesterol and stuff checked as well. It's beginning to snow again outside the studio here at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny. We are in the midst of some very wintry weather. We're going to have the news for you after the break. Someone says, is the Bray up Lurgy Brack from the Dry Arch Roundabout passable? It's clear, the last time I was on it, it's been treated. It was like a summer's day, effectively, in terms of the road condition. So unless something has, Charlie, drastically changed in the last few hours, you should be fine.